We give you all the viral stories that are just about to drop. Just please, oh please, oh please, oh please don't let this flop. If you keep scrolling, scrolling, scrolling and you're never gonna stop, then please, oh please, oh please, oh please don't let this flop. From stupid songs and dances, all the cultural advances, we will cover them from bottom to the top. Just please, oh please, oh please, oh please, I promise you'll appease her. Please, oh please, oh please don't let this flop.
Hi, I'm EJ Dixon.
And I'm Brittany Spanos. Welcome to Don't Let This Flop,
a podcast about TikTok and internet culture brought to you by Rolling Stone,
where millennials talk about teens, but not in a weird way.
Let's kick off with a prayer for Ben Platt, who got roasted to death last week. So the Dear Evan Hansen adaptation came out, and I didn't see it. I'm not going to. I don't care. But it's gotten absolutely atrocious reviews, most of which have focused on how old Ben Platt, who is 28, is to play Evan Hansen, the title character who's supposed to be in high school.
Have you ever felt like nobody was there? Have you ever felt forgotten in the middle of nowhere? Have you ever felt like you could disappear? Like you could fall and no one would hear. Even when the dark comes crashing through, when you need a friend to carry you, and when you're broken on the ground, you will be found.
The Times said he was less convincing than John Travolta in Grease. Vulture called it an unofficial orphan remake. It's been really brutal. And a lot of these critiques have originated on musical theater TikTok, which has been pretty badly roasting Platt for the past few months, ever since the first trailer came out in May.
Dear Evan Hansen, the movie is a tragic disaster.
Listen, it brings me no joy to say this, but Ben Platt is Lin-Manuel Miranda for gay people.
Yeah, and it doesn't help that Ben Platt has been enormously defensive about this criticism and kind of a prick about it. And he said on Zach Sang's show, basically, that he created the role, he workshopped it for 3 years, and the movie version wouldn't exist without him. So that negates any criticism he gets for being old, I suppose, is the idea.
So, yeah, I mean, obviously, old actors playing high schoolers is nothing new. Stockard Channing was in her 30s when she played Rizzo in Grease, famously. Rachel McAdams was 26 when she played Regina George. So what makes this particularly egregious in your opinion, Brittany?
I think a lot of people had already initially problems with the show, right? Like, I think there was already some innate issues with how the show kind of dealt with suicide and all the kind of really dark themes in it. And I've never seen the show or the movie, so this is just coming secondhand from theater friends who felt sort of iffy. And the same reasons that people felt iffy about 13 Reasons Why, where they're like, who is this for and what is the purpose of, like, or the audience for these topics? And yeah, I think, like, also just, yeah, Ben Platt's response to it has been bad from the start. Like, he was initially really weird when the trailer came out and people sort of pointed out that, you know, he looked very out of place. Yeah, it seems like a hair and makeup issue. Like, they only could do so much. And so it's just, it's not good all around.
It kind of reminds me of Cats, like when the Cats trailer came out with the special effects and they were just roundly roasted. Like, that was kind of the same reaction that people had to the Dear Evan Hansen trailer. Just, yeah. He just looked so ridiculous. He looked the closest comparison I could make is that he looked like a 17-year-old playing John Proctor in The Crucible, or like Giles Corey in The Crucible with like old age makeup, but like he was supposed to look like he was 17 years old.
Yeah, and I think, you know, people have been roasting him because of like the nepotism thing, right? Like, his dad's a really famous producer, and like how he kind of didn't play that part up as well, or like didn't really like acknowledge the fact that that's another reason why he got the role in the movie. Is I believe his dad is producing the movie and has produced a ton of really big budget films like this. And so, you know, the way he just sort of went around the very direct criticism that everyone was giving him and tried to play it off and get defensive is just really the issue. Like, once you get defensive, it's like easier to roast you.
The movie kind of flopped when it came out. I think it made like 7.6 million or something, you know, very disappointing like that domestically. I mean, do you think that the roasting had something to do with it?
Yeah, I just don't think that, you know, when people, it's a very like Broadway people show, right? Like that show was like, didn't really have a sort of like big cultural impact in the way that something like In the Heights did, for example. Like In the Heights kind of went further and beyond Broadway, where there was a little bit more of a universal appeal. And like Dear Evan Hansen is very classically old school theater and Broadway, and, you know, suddenly has this big budget film that already has all these controversies around it. I think people were kind of like turned off from the start. You know, the people that you'd want to reach for a movie production of a big Broadway show. So it didn't really have that like that sexiness to it that you'd want in like a musical adaptation. Like at least with Cats, like the songs are recognizable and you had like big names in it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the big thing. Like if you make something about high schoolers for high schoolers, you can kind of just expect to get roasted because they can smell inauthenticity like a mile away. And they've been like promoting on TikTok. You know, they have like sponsored ads on TikTok. They've been like Ben Platt is not, you know, has his own presence on TikTok, which is sort of, you know, cringy in and of itself. Where he sings like, you know, The Little Mermaid and stuff, and does all these like insane vocal riffs. So I think that they really tried to use TikTok as a platform to sort of reach the, you know, the target audience, and it kind of backfired tremendously.
That's the straight TikTok. So let's check in on what straight TikTok is doing. So Burger King is trying to compete with McDonald's over its celebrity meal collabs, and it's assembled like a shadow universe of celebs to parallel McDonald's. McDonald's has Sweetie and J Balvin and BTS, and Burger King has Nelly, Anita, who is this Brazilian pop star, and Lil Huddy, aka Chase Hudson, best known for being the ex of Charli D'Amelio, who we talked about in the pilot, and for being one of the most prominent figures in the pop punk revival, to some degree of success. He'll probably go like mildly far in the pop punk universe if he sticks with it. But, you know, it seems like a stretch to think he'll be a lifer in pop punk. He's very much like a 10-year-old girl's idea of what hot is. And yeah, he's a little Huddy. Now he has this Burger King meal, which seems kind of already a little bit less exciting than, say, Saweetie's kind of strange multiple combinations of how you can put chicken nuggets on a Big Mac and cover them with fries and sweet and sour sauce.
Burger King banned 120 artificial ingredients from its food. So why keep it real with a spicy chicken? You can leave off the pickles. Never really been my thing. Try the Chase Hudson meal. With food so real, Burger King had me put my real name on it.
And I do love how the commercial makes it so obvious.
The meal is a spicy chicken sandwich with cheese, mozzarella sticks, and a chocolate shake, which kind of seems like they just took everything that, like the separate things that people are interested in, like that they did, you know, like focus group testing, like, oh, like 14-year-olds like mozzarella sticks. They like milkshakes. They like chicken sandwich. And they just kind of like threw them together to make a meal. Because those things do not go together, in my opinion.
I didn't even know they had mozzarella sticks at Burger King. I know that was an option that you can get. Or was it just like specifically for the Lil Huddy meal?
I think I don't know the answer to that, but I feel in my heart like it's an option. You know, it just sounds right that Burger King would have mozzarella sticks.
Yeah, and it's also them eliminating 120 artificial ingredients from its menu. So this is the idea that it's like keeping it real. But yeah, the meal doesn't sound very good.
Yeah, I also just have like an aversion to like meat, like chicken and cheese or like fish and cheese. Because my husband's Italian, so I think, and that's like a verboten in that culture that, yeah. So I just have like sort of like an instinctual aversion to that.
It also feels less like what, again, like I don't think like Burger King already has mozzarella sticks. So it feels less like something he would order there as opposed to like Saweetie, where it seems very clear that she would order, based off of like all of her like weird food videos on her Instagram and Twitter, like it seems like she would genuinely order like chicken McNuggets, a Big Mac, and like fries and like put them all in like weird combinations together. Cause she already does that. Like we already have that sort of like that part of her that we understand. Like the BTS meal also seemed like something they like would order from McDonald's. I think it was just like chicken nuggets or something and like fries and like some like other random thing. But yeah, it seems a little disingenuous to what Lil Huddy would order at Burger King.
Yeah, that's what's so, like, bizarre about these, like, big brand TikToker collaborations to me is it just seems so, like, retro and, like, they're sort of, like, retrofitting and, like, reverse engineering, like, a commodifiable meal around this person's, like, personality, which isn't really that strong or recognizable to begin with. Like, I mean, yeah. I'm sure that you had the Charlie last year when Dunkin' Donuts made the Charlie.
I actually didn't try it, but I remember seeing it. The sweet foam really turned good. Me off. Yeah, the sweet foam didn't sound like something I would enjoy. I like a more classic Dunkin' Donuts situation. And the sweet foam sounded a little too much for me.
But it was clearly something that, like, she would not have ordered. Because, first of all, I mean, I didn't drink coffee when I was 16. I highly yeah. doubt that Charlie does,
oh,
too.
I was, like, obsessed with, like, Frappuccinos and stuff when I was a kid, like when I was like a teenager.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And like, I feel like there's such a big culture around iced coffee on TikTok. Like, that's such a big, like, so many videos are like people showing off the way that they make their iced coffee at home, like really elaborate, like super gross, like usually like a lot of like syrup and milk, and it's barely coffee, but like, it's a big sort of brand of TikToks. And also, like, Starbucks drinks or drink orders are really big on TikTok. Like, I feel like teens, I mean, I don't know, it's like a big part, like going to Starbucks as a teen was a big thing for me and my friends. Like, we would hang out at Starbucks and like always get like really gross Frappuccinos that I don't think I would enjoy as much now because they were just milkshakes basically. But
I guess Emma Chamberlain is really into iced coffee too. Like, yeah. That's part of her brand. I guess it is sort of like a teenager thing, is like making iced coffee part of your brand.
Yeah.
So I guess it sort of makes sense, but I don't know if this, I just don't feel like Lil Huddy is a recognizable enough name to sell like a spicy chicken sandwich with cheese and mozzarella sticks and a chocolate shake. Like, and the other people that they have in this campaign are like Nelly, who, like, what is Nelly doing?
Yeah. Anita's huge. Anita's like a big get for it. And she did like a big commercial that was featured in, I believe the VMAs. They were kind of like doing like a million Anita Burger King commercials. So she's like the biggest person that they definitely have for this. Like, she has a huge fandom.
I think that's the first I heard of her is her at the VMAs.
Yeah. So she's pretty big. But yeah, Lil Huddy, I did get a friend who is also on TikTok daily, and she saw an ad for it, and she sent it to me, and she was like, "Who is this?" So I don't know that he was the best choice.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a
likelihood. So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
In other news, Addison Rae got called out for mispronouncing Versace, and I can't deal with it. Like, basically, she got her makeup done at the Versace show and made a video about it for the Versace account, and I'm pronouncing it the way that it's supposed to be pronounced, apparently, which is Versace, but she pronounced it Versace.
Hey y'all, it's Addison. I'm getting my makeup and hair done right now for the Versace show tonight. I'm so excited. I can't see anything. I'm gonna do another post with the finished look. So stay tuned, follow Versace for the finished look after I'm done.
I think it's like a fairly minor difference. Like, I don't, you know, she didn't, it didn't sound that bad to me, but people started freaking out about it and leaving comments saying like, girl, it's Versace. And like, she doesn't even know how to pronounce it, LOL.
That's the thing with this is such like a minor, so minor. First off, like the majority of humans in the world do not know the difference between Versace and Versace. Like, most people are pronouncing it Versace, I would say. I feel like there's like probably like a small amount of people who then, because people hate Addison Rae, are like, have like glommed onto it and made it such a thing. But I would say the majority of people don't know that it's pronounced Versace.
99.9% of Americans pronounce it Versace.
Yeah.
And that's not like, a problem.
Even if she said Versace, like, I would still be like, you know what? Like, there are, I didn't know how to pronounce Louboutin I called it Louboutin for like a very long time and had a full fashion internship and embarrassed myself. So I'm pro S and Ray in this fight. I'm on her side.
I mean, the obvious Versace parallel is to that iconic scene in Showgirls where Elizabeth Berkley pronounces it Versace. So I would think if she pronounced it Versace, it would be like a winking nod to that.
Nice dress.
Thanks. I bought it at Versace.
And I would really respect that. Like, that would be awesome if Addison Rae pronounced, like demonstrated to her fan base that she was a fan of Showgirls. But she made a video about it. Where she pronounces it correctly multiple times, and she later deleted it. But, I mean, it shows that she clearly took it in stride.
So I'm super excited to be here at the Versace show with Versace at the Versace show. Right, guys? Versace!
Yeah, I mean, so I asked my husband not to bring my Italian husband back into the podcast again. But, I mean, he said Versace... He said Versace is the Italian pronunciation. But honestly, who cares? I don't care.
Yeah, I don't. It's one of those things, again, where it's like a pile on where because some people who were more in the know and kind of knew that this is the way to pronounce it started up. And because of like, it's, you know, it's easy to poke fun at Addison Rae. It's now become like a thing that is such a non-thing. Like the majority of people probably also piling onto her. We're pronouncing it the same way, I'm sure.
Do we want to talk about how Addison Rae is being replaced by Megan Fox as Kourtney Kardashian's best friend?
Yeah, I mean, it was bound to happen. They're in like the perfect sort of like double date scenario with Travis Barker and Machine Gun Kelly. Addison Rae is not dating a pop punk celebrity at the time. So now we have Megan Fox and Kourtney Kardashian, which I love as a friendship. Like, I'm obsessed with this.
Yeah, so basically Addison Rae and Kourtney Kardashian are BFFs, strategic BFFs. We've talked about it before mm-hmm. on the pilot. Kourtney made a cameo appearance in her movie, He's All That. You know, they're out on the town together. They make TikToks together. They've been friends for a really long time, and everybody's been like, this is kind of a weird thing because Kourtney is, what, like 20 years older than Addison? But it's sort of become a part of both of their brands. And then, you know, Kourtney Kardashian starts hanging out. She starts dating Travis Barker, and she starts hanging out with Megan Fox and Machine Gun Kelly, and they take all these really horny photos together, like the pics that went viral at the VMAs. They're all just making out, and it's just like Tongue City, and people become obsessed with them. And then Megan Fox appears in a Skims ad, which is Kim Kardashian's like shapewear line with Kourtney Kardashian, and everybody starts speculating that Addison Rae and Kourtney Kardashian have had a falling out as a result.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know necessarily that it was probably a falling out. I feel like, again, like a lot of their friendship was strategic, you know, leading to Kourtney Kardashian's incredible film debut. And yeah, I don't know that there was a big dramatic thing because we've been seeing, you know, Kourtney and Megan hanging out for a long time because of Machine Gun Kelly and Travis Barker. But I don't know. The friendship was already very strange. Her presence on Keeping Up with the Kardashians, like I haven't watched the show super regularly in years, but I did see a lot of clips of that going viral because it was just like the most insane sort of way of Addison coming into this family dynamic and even all of the sisters being like, why is Kourtney hanging out with a 20-year-old? So it's just a very strange friendship. It's for the best that they both move on and find people more age appropriate to hang out with.
I feel like we should play that Sarah McLachlan song, The I Will Remember You song that plays on like the high school like prom montages.
A clip show of their Instagram posts together.
Yeah. Pour one out for them. So, Brittany, have you been getting these restaurant review TikToks on your For You page?
All the time. I get so many New York kind of check out this secret spot, TikToks constantly. My algorithm has definitely pinpointed exactly where I live and places that I should go to.
So can you describe basically like what these videos, like what template do they follow?
So a lot of the videos are kind of this montage of people like eating or drinking at different restaurants and clubs. There's usually a voiceover, typically like just like one person sort of describing like you have to check out this hot spot, like making the case that this is like the go-to place for, you know, to see like celebrities, to see people, to be seen, to like try this food, to go there. You know, it's very kind of intensely recommended narration, usually pretty fast paced. A lot of people kind of yelling at you to go to these places.
So basically everyone who's anyone in New York City has eaten at Via Carota. And if you haven't, please get with the program. Domois wanted us to check out the scene, and as expected, we had a celebrity sighting. Had to start with an Aperol spritz and pretty much every appetizer on the menu. Their vegetable game is unmatched. The fried zucchini, artichokes, and grilled vegetables are amazing. And yes, they do cancel out the carbs from the cacio e pepe. Simple math. We also got the ragu and this incredible pesto pasta, finished with the tiramisu and grilled peaches with mascarpone. If you can find a way to get a table, you better go.
The videos have this very specific tone where they're like, it's almost like bullying, like very upbeat bullying. Like they're trying to convince you to go to this specific restaurant, but they're like incredibly aggressive.
Yeah.
About it. and I've been sending these to people for like months, being both like, we need to go here. And also like, these are so obnoxious, but also I'm weirdly obsessed with them. So I feel like they're successful in that regard. Like they're just the right amount of annoying, but also aspirational.
And they're a pretty mixed bag too, right? Like where it's like, some of them are genuinely giving you like really great recommendations where you're finding out places that have just opened up or places where kind of have become like the new place that celebrities are like eating dinner at that are super popular, like Des Moines or like different sort of tabloidy places. And then there are some where it's like, this is like a secret spot and it's Le Bon at like, oh my God, what's the name of the hotel? It's like random. It's like places that are like genuinely very big and like Le Bon at the Standard. And it's like, it's not that secret. So that's always kind of the fun, is treating it like the little gatekeeping of it is always very funny.
Yeah, and I think there's also there's immense privilege that comes like with influencer culture, like and these are primarily like very beautiful young white women who are just like showing off their wealth and their ability mm-hmm. to eat at these incredible restaurants every night.
It's always Manhattan. It's always Manhattan.
Yeah, it's never outer borough. Like you never see like a TikTok in the Bronx or even like Brooklyn, really.
Yeah, it's very rare. You'll see some Williamsburg.
Occasionally. Content,
but I very rarely see recommendations for places to go in any of the outer boroughs. Like, it's always Manhattan. It's always, like, this club is, like, you know, in the Meatpacking District in Manhattan. Or, like, this is in the East Village. Like, it's really never outside of Manhattan.
So people have started there's this one specific account that makes a lot of these. It's these two women, Meg and Audrey, and they have this account called the VIP List, which has 364,000 followers, and they basically review restaurants and bars and have these experiences all over New York. And they've kind of patented this, like, very upbeat, very, like, you have to fucking go to Lucienne. Like, it's, if you don't get the cheese fondue, like, fuck you, you're an asshole. That's, like, very much, they've kind of, like, patented that tone, and people have started making parodies of them, which are pretty hilarious. And we decided to have them on our show to talk about their content and like what it's like to go viral and be parodied in real time.
It took us all around the city while we were literally thriving in the hot tub and chugging rosé with Lady Liberty.
So can you guys really quickly introduce yourselves?
Yeah, no problem. I'm Meg.
I'm Audrey.
And that's Audrey.
So can you guys tell me about how you started the VIP List on TikTok?
Yeah, basically, me and Audrey have known each other since preschool. We've been best friends since preschool. And we were so bored during quarantine. I was in my New York shoebox apartment And
like, I was by myself. In Miami.
Yeah, and she was in Miami, and I was like, do you know what? Like, let me download TikTok. I'm so bored. So I started watching people's videos, and they were telling people where to go and, like, where to party. And I was like, if anyone knows where to go and where to party, it's us. So I posted the first, like, club review. I reviewed Marquee, and it hit, like, 10K views. And at that time, I was like, oh, my God, I'm going viral. Like, so I called Audrey immediately. And I was like, listen, like, we could have a business from this.
Yeah. And then basically, so I was in Miami and I also was doing a lot of work with nightlife and also restaurants in Miami. So basically, we started with New York and Miami, like using content from our pre-quarantine lives and posting that on TikTok. And it just kind of kept growing and gaining momentum. So eventually, like when my lease was up in Miami, I moved to New York and we started and kept going.
Yeah, and here we are.
did you guys find it hard to make content during lockdown? Because obviously, like, the restaurant scene looked a lot different last year than it does now.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, so first things first, I've always had, like, the most obnoxious Instagram and Snapchat story. Like, I always took so much content, and Audrey had so much content from her restaurant work, like, working in the restaurants. So we literally had so much content. Like, we would be making music videos, reusing the content, and then we would also do, like, takeout reviews were a huge thing. Like, we would be reviewing, like, from, like Nobu Takeout, Capital Grill Takeout, like, things like that. So that was something that we could do from home during quarantine, which was really nice. We did that when we ran out of nightclub stuff.
Yeah, because we both just had a lot of content from before lockdown. Like, I was doing an internship in the hospitality industry in Miami, and I also always loved going out to eat and, like, going out in general, and same with Meg. So we basically just used all of that until we ran out, and then we transitioned from that into takeout and cocktail recipes and stuff like that.
Yeah, we didn't even do food at first. Like, we were doing more, like, lifestyle content, and then when we ran out, we're like, maybe we should just try to put, like, something food up just to see what happens. And that ended up being our niche that, like, was the best.
How do you guys afford to have all these incredible meals? Are they comped by the restaurant, or do you guys pay for them yourselves?
So
it depends.
Yeah, we do a little bit of both. Restaurants definitely reach out to us and ask us to come in. And if that's the situation, then it will be a comp. But otherwise, like, a lot of times we do pay for our own meals because we work 24/7. Basically, we both do VIP lists full time. So through doing that, we're able to make enough to also.
Yeah. And also, in order to be like give the most candid review possible, we've learned that, like, paying for it is better because then you could say whatever you want. You know what I'm saying? Like, if a restaurant's coming a meal, you're not going to be like, oh, this was so bad, you know? So. But whenever we do have a comp and, like, say we don't like it, we just don't post.
Yeah, we'll tell the restaurant. We'll kind of give them the option. Like, we could either do a very honest review of how our actual experience was and post that, but it's not going to be positive. Or we could just refrain from posting since we're working with the restaurant. Yeah. We're not going to just, like, kind of,
yeah,
like,
and also, like, the best restaurants don't comp for influencers. Like, the hardest restaurants to get into in New York, the ones that you can barely get a reservation at, they don't need influencers. So we really do pay for a lot of them.
Yeah.
So how did you guys notice, like, I've been following you guys for a while, but it hasn't been until recently that I started noticing that you guys were being parodied, like, pretty extensively. So how did you guys first become aware of that?
People were tagging us. Like, a lot of our followers were tagging us in the comments, and, like, I forget if I saw it first or Meg saw it first, but one of us saw it and, like, sent it to the other, and we were like, oh my God, like, this is hilarious. Like,
and it just, like, it's so funny. Like, that one girl made a video and now it's a complete trend, and they just keep getting funnier. And it came to the point where I don't know if you saw, we reviewed Lucien, because, like, the original girl was like, we went to Lucien, it was just so fucking good. So we, like, went there to, like, parody ourselves.
So yesterday we went to the super low-key hidden gem called Lucien because we heard it's just so fucking good. So obviously we'll be the judge of that. You're welcome. We had to start with some Cabernet cocktails and escargot. If you don't eat escargot, please grow up. We also got the steak tartare, French onion soup, and the wedge salad with a poached egg. And yes, it was money shot central. For entrees, we got the steak frites, lobster pasta, and this filet mignon au poivre. 10 out of 10. You thought we wouldn't get a dessert spread? Please. Lucien is 100% worth the hype. Go cry about it.
Oh, so this comes from, like, this comes from one girl's TikTok.
Yeah. And then like now it's a whole trend to do that.
Cause she posted a video and it like went viral. And then another girl posted a similar video and that also went viral. So I think from like the combination of those, just like other people started catching on and doing it as well.
Yeah.
Why do you think people find your guys' videos so funny?
Cause we're like obnoxious. Like they're supposed to be satire. That's what people don't understand. Like we're not like, we're not that extra. Like we obviously
it's so exaggerated. It's so exaggerated. And I think that people just like see it. And either some people, honestly, a lot of people think that it's not satire, which is like where all the hate comments come from. But, yeah, I just feel like people see it and they're like, well, it's just like, it's different than a lot of the other restaurant reviews that are out there.
Yeah, like, I think we have, like, a very unique perspective. But, yeah, people don't get the satire. Like, we have a video right now up about Nougatine. And in the video, I'm like, sometimes you just got to say fuck it and spend $80 on a finger sandwich. Like, obviously, I'm not serious. Like, that's an absurd thing to do.
Like, you don't think like, that's actually relatable.
How dare you? Yeah. Like, like, people don't get it. Like, it's all a joke.
Sometimes you just got to say fuck it and spend $80 on a finger sandwich.
How about a fuck no? I'm not spending $80 on a fingerling sandwich with baby grapes on it.
But it clearly like isn't entirely satire, right? Because you guys have built a business on these restaurant reviews and you're like genuinely, you know, recommending these restaurants to people.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just like our unique way of doing it. Mm-hmm. Like it's our take on like how we do it. Like, I don't know. No one wants to like so many people who review restaurants. And people can be like, oh, like the pizza was good, the pasta was good, but like we just decide to be obnoxious and extra as hell.
Yeah. And Meg, were you in the hospitality business at all too? And is there kind of a goal to keep this going and growing beyond TikTok?
Yeah. So I like waitressed like my whole high school and college, but I actually worked in finance. I just left my finance job to do this full time recently. And yeah, we do restaurant consulting for a lot of restaurants in the city. And we definitely plan on, like we do a lot of social media management, restaurant consulting, events with restaurants. So yeah, we're definitely going to be getting deeper and deeper into the hospitality industry. It's definitely our focus.
What do you make of the comments that are like, these girls are so privileged, like this is such, you know, consumerist garbage? Like I see that a lot on your page.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of comments like that. And I mean, it's just comes from the fact that no one really knows like who we actually are, and people just see this character online, like the way that we present our reviews, and just make assumptions based on that. Like, if especially the people who don't think it's satire, they're just like, you're so obnoxious, you're like, you don't give back to society, all of these things. And I just feel like it's people who don't.
Yeah, they like, don't. They understand. Don't know us. Like, yeah. Like literally, like. People, the best is when people say daddy's money. Like, I make more than both of my parents. I come from very humble beginnings. Like, we're not white privileged. Like,
we're both
we don't have trust funds.
We're not financially independent.
Money. Yeah. We both pay for our entire rent. We pay for everything ourselves. And I don't know why I feel like if we were men, like, no one would be saying that. Like for like a guy, like going out to, if a guy was going out to nice restaurants, would people be like, oh, like your daddy's money or I don't think so. I think it's because we're women and like people just don't like to see two independent women killing it.
What do you make of, why do you think that you guys have taken off on TikTok specifically to the degree that you have? Because obviously restaurant reviews are like, you know, that's been around forever. But why do you think TikTok has been such a good platform for you guys?
I feel like TikTok like is more of, it gives you a better chance to kind of give the full experience. Whereas like Instagram food reviews are normally, well, in the past were normally just like a photo with a caption or like a news article in like the New York Times, like just like detailing everything like written out with maybe like one or two photos. But now with TikTok, we can show videos and like fully like do a voiceover explaining and like kind of putting you in the moment, I guess.
Yeah, like showing the whole experience. I think that's what definitely differentiated us from like the Instagram food bloggers who just like post a picture. Also TikTok, like it's honestly partially luck. Like we joined at such a critical time. Like everyone was on their phones during quarantine, so bored. And if you joined TikTok at that time and were producing content, like you blew up. Like there are like all the New York TikTokers that we came up with all like blew up at the same time, you know? And yeah, so we found that TikTok was definitely like the best way because it was brand new and very easy to grow.
Yeah. Thank you both so much.
No, thank you. Thank you so much.
It's time for the Himbo of the Week, where we crown this week's elite himbo of TikTok. And this week we have to go with Shawn Mendes for his answers to the Vanity Fair lie detector test when they asked about his For You page.
Would people be surprised to see what's on your For You page?
Yeah. Yes, I'm sure they would. I don't know what people are expecting to be on my For You page.
Shawn, what's on your For You page?
Things. All types. What's on your For You page? This stuff.
That's private.
Yeah. That's why it's a For Me page.
He literally could have said anything in this. He could have said he, you know, had like a bunch of dog videos, could have been berries and cream, could have been just like guitar content. He plays guitar, could have just been pictures of guitars. But he just said things, stuff, which I guess like also I kind of understand, right? Like, I feel like I can't fully sometimes explain everything that's on my For You page on Instagram or TikTok. But Shawn just went with that.
I feel like I could. I feel like it's bisexual thirst traps and musical theater content. Like, that is primarily what it is. Like, if somebody asked me what's on your For You page, that is what I would say.
Because this one, he's specifically talking about Instagram, right, too, where it's like probably he just like doesn't know what that is. But also, of course, like Shawn is being constantly plagued with rumors about sexuality. And so, of course, the internet had a field day with it. You know, everything about the video, people just kind of were blowing up. Like, he had answered weirdly about Joe Alwyn, Taylor Swift's boyfriend, sort of said that his, like, he looks like a villain because he has blue eyes. Like, it was just like all of his questions were super, super wacky in this interview. And of course, him saying things for his For You page was non-answer that did not satisfy anyone.
Yeah, I do you think that he knows how to use TikTok?
Yeah, he like makes TikToks.
But that doesn't mean he knows how to use.
Yeah, I mean, he's young. I feel like he does.
I guess.
From the Vine world. Yeah, I trust that he knows how to use like the stuff, right? But like, he's not using it regularly.
Do you think it's like an overly personal question? There were some people saying that, like, oh, he didn't need to answer that because like asking what's on someone's For You page is like very personal. Like, do you think that's too personal?
I think in the context of this interview, right? Like, it's a lie detector. He's being hooked up to a machine and he seemed like he was already very nervous. Like, you could tell by all of his answers where he was just like, didn't really know how to answer them. So he was just like trying to be as brutally honest as possible. Like, there was one where he said that he was mad that Harry Styles didn't follow him on Instagram, like stuff like that. So I think he just probably didn't really know how to answer it. It's like, you know, stupid non-answer.
It was really sus. Himbo-y. It was really sus. Yeah, it is very himbo-y to be like, no, I'm not going to answer like what's on my For You page. Like, that's himbo. That's himbo behavior. Like, he could have literally said, like you said earlier, he could have literally said anything. But yeah. Instead, he acted like it was like an offensive question. And I feel like it's not an offensive question at all. You know, yeah. Like, people have asked him, interviewers have asked him much more offensive questions.
Yeah. I'm also like, you know, maybe he's just not scrolling through as much. Maybe too.
Yeah, maybe he's only getting Addison Rae.
I don't want to get too defensive of Shawn because, you know, he's a mega rich, like 20-year-old pop star. But like, I feel like if I was put on the spot on a lie detector, I would also kind of like nervously not really know how to answer it.
Did you like when he said that Camila Cabello's VMAs, was it VMAs or Met Gala?
It's giving Cher.
Yeah.
Yes, I was obsessed with that. Of course I was obsessed with that.
It's giving Cher.
It's for the Met Gala. She was not giving Cher.
She was not giving Cher, even a little bit.
I wanted to be on the record that she was absolutely not giving Cher. But yeah, that was an incredible video. And Lizzo,
I kind of
just
wish that Cher had responded to that. Like, she's on, Cher is unhinged enough on Twitter that, like, I feel like it would not be within the realm of, like, reasons for her to respond to that on her Twitter.
She probably knows that it wasn't giving Cher, so she stayed out of it.
It's not even worth commenting on.
Thanks so much for listening to Don't Let This Flop This Week in TikTok, brought to you by Rolling Stone and Cumulus Podcast Network. Written and hosted by me, Brittany Spanos, and EJ Dixon. Executive produced by Jason Fine, Bridget Shelsey, and Elizabeth Garber-Paul. Edited by Matthew Whitehurst. And original music composed by Daniel Martzluft. Like and subscribe us on anywhere that you get your podcasts.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.